Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City, friends. Yes, friends, here at NOLA Drinks. We're generally not in the habit of paying somebody back for a payment that we didn't know about in the first place. Ooh, can anyone say false financial disclosure? Hey, we got a good show coming up for you here today. We're going to take care of some business and housekeeping because we are chock full of interviews coming up on the show. First up, after we take the first commercial break here in a few minutes, we are going to chat with Amy Brown, who is the executive director of Nalfi, which is, of course, the NOLA Wine and Food Experience. Great event coming up over Memorial Day weekend. And Amy took over as the executive director late last year and has been working very hard at putting on this big annual event, an important event in the world of wine and food in New Orleans. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Amy some weeks ago, really a few months ago, I think, when I was filling in for my good pal Tim McNally on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show one day when he was out of town. And, you know, I asked Amy some pretty difficult questions during that interview, and we picked back up with some of those questions this time on the show. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think Nalfi has struggled a little bit to be the event that it needs to be. I'll put it that way. Some issues with getting actual wineries to show up as opposed to just distributors, improving the visitor experience from just sort of a cattle call drunk fest that it's sort of become, at least with the grand tastings and some other things. And I appreciate Amy's candor. I asked her some of these questions, and she's working very hard to address these issues and really restore Nalfi to the really good event that it is. I think we're going to see some really good improvements this year. You'll hear her talk about that. And I think in the years to come, including trying to put on a world-class wine competition and some other things, which takes time to pull together and you have to do it right. I'm glad they didn't try and rush into it. There was some talk of trying to do it this year and they chose to not rush into it, which I think was a good move. So, you know, bear with Nalfi over the next year, two, 3 years, and hopefully it goes in the right direction again. Gets back to what it needs to be. It you know, used to be a really great event. It's still a good event, don't get me wrong, and it's an important event. And one of the things I think she mentions this too that I think is a good idea is they're talking about moving it off of Memorial Day weekend, because that's just bad for the wineries. It's just not a good weekend. You know, you're starting to ramp up the growing season for one, at least, you know, in California, of course, Northern Hemisphere. It's also just, you know, it's a big weekend, a lot of wineries. And if you're trying to get small wineries out here, which you want to do, it's all hands on deck often on these 3 day weekends in the tasting room and that sort of thing. So anyway, we chat with Amy about Nalfi and, you know, what you can get involved in, the small events, the big events, the stuff leading up to the weekend, dinners, all that good stuff. So interesting chat there. And a special shout out to our friends at Sylvain Restaurant right there in the French Quarter, right by Jackson Square, 625 Charter Street, for hosting us once again as we taped that interview. Then in the second half of the show, we are going to move on and we are going to chat with Abigail Gulo and Elizabeth Pierce from Drink and Learn. And Drink and Learn is something that Elizabeth has been doing for a number of years. Elizabeth is a cocktail historian, a tour guide, a presenter, and she's been doing, as I said, stuff with Drink and Learn, a blog and that sort of thing for quite some time, a handful of years. And they started a podcast and Elizabeth got this rolling and then asked Abigail, our good friend there, Abigail Gulo, who runs the bar at the noted restaurant Compare La Pan. So Abby is on board as Elizabeth's partner. They do a podcast. It's about 30 minutes and they do it once every couple weeks. And the idea, they've got two or three, I think, out now. But moving forward, they're going to be highlighting a particular drink, starting with a lot of the classics and that sort of thing, and tell you how to make it, tell you some of the story behind it, talk about variations or approaches to making it, anecdotes, that sort of thing. So it's a good effort that they are putting forth with Drink and Learn. And how one thing to note here is that, as you know, this show is available on the National Food and Beverage Podcast Network, as are they. So we're podcast network mates, as I like to say. And so we actually tape this. Of course, the National Food and Beverage Foundation is the parent organization, umbrella organization, if you will, for the wonderful Southern Food and Beverage Museum right there on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard in Central City here in New Orleans. And that's where we tape that interview, which we do from time to time. Now that we're part of the platform there, or the podcast network, I should say, we take advantage of the opportunity to go tape in the museum. It's a really cool spot. They're open every day except for Tuesdays. Go check it out. It's also home to the Museum of the American Cocktail. There's the Galerie de Absinthe, which I just butchered that, but the Absinthe Gallery. And some really, they got a good little gift shop going on in there. It's a cool space to go check out, so please do check them out. But interesting conversation that we have with Elizabeth and Abby in the second half of the show from Drink and Learn. Friends, I wanted to flag your attention to something pretty important. Let me say this first. Yes, it's weekend number two of Jazz Fest. I should acknowledge that lots of visitors in town. We always appreciate our visitors in town, especially for this great event. Really important, and it kind of tees up where I'm going with this. Weather's been good for Jazz Fest. Also, you can go look up who's playing at Jazz Fest this weekend. We talked a little bit about some of the events that went on earlier in the week outside of the Jazz Fest itself. Anyway, where I wanted to go with this is that if we go back to the show on April 12th, and you can go get the podcast on NolaDrinks.com, which I highly encourage you to check out if you have not heard that one already. In the second half of the show, our featured interview is with jazz historian and tour guide John McCusker of the Cradle of Jazz Tour. And John works tirelessly not only to do the tours and research and these things into the history of jazz, but also is an indefatigable... Yeah, I'm trying to say indefatigable. I can't even say it. I staunch supporter of, I should probably know how to pronounce a word before I use it. I know what it means, and I can actually spell it anyway. But John is an ardent, strident defender of jazz history, culture, and preserving some of the important landmarks around town. And one of the things that John points out in the interview is a lot of the homes of some of the early inventors of jazz are actually still standing. So we need to preserve these places. And for a city, and I make this point all the time, but for a city that depends on tourism, and a significant part of that tourism is here for the music, right? And jazz plays the center role in all that. I was reading some stuff that people lending support to some of John's efforts. We're talking about folks from Europe, Japan, all over the country, all over the world, really come to New Orleans in large part, or even entirely in many cases, for the music and for the jazz music. And I think with Jazz Fest going on, that we see that, right? Now, there is a surprisingly small amount of protection that is actually given to so many of these places, like birthplaces of some of these great jazz innovators. One in particular is Buddy Bolden. And we talked about Buddy Bolden in the interview on April 12th with John. So go back and, as I said, go check that out. But the Buddy Bolden house is still standing. It is at 2309 First Street. And this is a particular place that is... owned by, which church is it? Excuse me one second here. I'll get that for you. It's owned by a particular church, and I'm drawing a blank on the name. But they are looking, what they're doing is they're trying to build a community center on the lot that the Bolden home stands. There's some protection afforded the Bolden home, but it cannot be bulldozed, essentially. So what they're doing is that they are actually leaving this to... basically fall down through neglect. It's demolition through neglect, if you want to call it that. And there's nothing that's preventing that from happening. So that the idea is this building literally just crumbles, and then they build this community center. And it's a big problem. Buddy Bolden, and go listen to the interview. Don't have too much time to get into this, but most early jazz musicians that we have documentation of them speaking and being interviewed, no recordings exist of Buddy Bolden. If they did, they're long gone. He was sort of the founder of jazz, as many say, or the grandfather, whatever you want to say, but one of the original pioneers of jazz music. It's a touchstone for New Orleans. It's a touchstone for our culture. Jazz was invented in New Orleans. It's a touchstone for African American culture in this part of the world and everywhere as well. And we really need to prevent this home from going by the wayside. It needs to be an historical landmark. So to that end, Tuesday, May 8th at the City Council Chamber and City Hall, the New Orleans City Planning Commission is going to be hearing from the church about a variance to start the process to build their community center. And you can write a letter, go to our Facebook page, you'll find it. There's some information, and you want to include the case number and some things that you can find there that you want to put in the subject line. You can just email the letter in. It's cpcinfo@nola.gov. Once again, cpcinfo@nola.gov. You can attend the meeting Tuesday, May 8th, 1:30 p.m. at City Council Chamber and City Hall, which is at 1300 Perdido. Friends, yes, please do go check that out. It's an important thing to see and an important thing to do. It is the Greater St. Stephen Church are the folks that hold the property. So please lend some support to John and what he's doing. Check out the podcast from April 12th. Check out our Facebook page where you can find information on how you can write and help support preserving the Buddy Bolden home. It's an important landmark in the history of New Orleans, with the history of jazz. It's important to our tourism economy and so much more. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. When we come back, we're going to chat with Amy Brown. And then after that, we're going to jump right back in, chatting with Elizabeth and Abby from Drink and Learn. Come on back.
I got to have it.
Wine, wine, wine.
I got to have it.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday Night Fish Fry. It was rocking.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Friends, thanks for tuning into the show today. As always, and if you're listening at the top of the show, and I hope you were, you know that our first guest here this afternoon is Amy Brown, who is the executive director of what we call NAWFE, but that is, of course, the New Orleans Wine and Food Experience. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I know back a few months ago when I was filling in for my good buddy Tim on his show, you were a guest and we kind of set the wheels in motion to get you on my show, which
yes,
is
yes, absolutely.
Great. And you guys are, you told me when you walked in, 3 weeks out from the thing.
Yes, it's scary, but I'm so excited. I mean, there's just not going to be anything better than seeing all of my hard work come to life. And I'm excited to get, you know, all the wineries down here and see our distributors and all of our participants, our restaurants, our attendees. It's going to be amazing.
That's great. Now, this is the first one that you've done as executive director, correct?
Correct. I have had one NAWFE under my belt in my last position as assistant to the executive director, but this is my first one in this role.
That's great. And when did you take over as executive director?
In November.
Oh, okay. So about 6 months ago.
So recent. Yeah. I'm very, very blessed to have had that experience with Jamie, the last executive director last year. And so I was really set off on a path for success from that. And I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing how the festival turns out this year. It's going to be great.
Yeah, well, let's do this, Amy. Let's talk a little bit about, do some background on NAWFE. And we're going to call it NAWFE because that's what we do here. And, you know, how long has the event been around?
So this is its 26th year.
Wow.
Yep. Yes, it's been around a long time. You know, we have about 50% local, 50% out of town. People have been coming for the full 26 years. We're very excited. People really make a commitment to come each and every year. And so, yeah, we've been around a long time.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. And it's, well, as you said, you get about 50% visitorship. So mm-hmm. We get a lot of people that come see us and come spend the weekend, which
absolutely,
which is really cool. Mm-hmm. So tell people what the event is if they don't know what New Orleans Wine and Food Experience is.
So first and foremost, we are also a nonprofit organization. So people, you know, a lot of people don't know that about us. It's very special. All of your ticket purchases will actually go towards a new beneficiary each year. Nunez Community College's Culinary Arts Program our beneficiary this year. So first and foremost, a nonprofit. Secondly, we are also a food and wine festival. We really celebrate all of our local talent when it comes to cuisine, and then we bring in wine from all over the world.
Very cool. Do you guys look to change up the charity every year?
Yes,
is that how it works?
Every year. So Nunez has actually been our beneficiary the last 2 years, but we definitely are, you know, always looking for new beneficiaries. You know, if anyone's listening that works with an organization that wants to apply, please do. We are just, you know, so excited to give back to our community.
Do you guys kind of look to do stuff that has at least some loose affiliation with food and drink and
absolutely
that sort of thing?
So definitely in the hospitality industry or food or wine. So
gotcha. So now with the event itself, there's the grand tasting, which a lot of people probably know about, but then you have a whole series of events, right? That
absolutely
kick off the week leading up to the weekend.
We have some smaller events that actually a lot of people don't know about. Of course, we have our staple events, the Royal Street Stroll, and we actually have two grand tastings this year. We brought it back to our older model, having a Friday evening grand tasting and a Saturday afternoon grand tasting. Two very different vibes. You know, one's late, you know, going out kind of vibe. The next day is kind of brunch, you know, seersucker vibe. So two great days to choose from. A lot of people do both. And then all throughout the weekend, we have events as well, smaller, more intimate events. We call them experiences. You know, think of them as an adult field trip.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, one of them is called Wine Around, where we're going to get on a bus and go around to different wine establishments in New Orleans, you know, Bacchanal.
Sure, that's a great place.
We're going to do that, and then we're also going to have some sausage making classes at Koshan Butcher. And so, I mean, it's just really exciting how many smaller, more intimate events that we're going to have as well.
Now, Amy, does that work in such fashion that people can get, and we'll circle back on all these details at the end of the interview, but does it, people can get on, and those are individually ticketed events?
Yes, all on our website.
Yeah,
Nowfee.com.
Nowfee.com. So there you go. So, and then the Royal Street Stroll, which you mentioned, has definitely been a centerpiece activity as part of Nowfee for a while. Is that the Thursday evening? Is that right?
Yes. So that is Thursday. First are our wine dinners on Wednesday. Then Thursday is Royal Street Stroll, 5:30 to 8:30.
Now, is there like an inclusive package that people can get, so you can kind of get, you get the Royal Street Stroll plus the grand tasting and...
Absolutely. We actually have a couple of packages to choose from that you'll see on our website as well. One that comes with both Grand Tastings and Royal Street. One called the Connoisseur Package, which gives you tickets to all of the events. And then, of course, a VIP package with early entry, you know, 30 minutes early, our VIP lounges, things like that. So, but we definitely have our a la carte tickets as well, if you can't commit to, you know, a whole 5 days of festivities.
Sure. Fair enough. That works great. How... with the restaurants, when you all do the wine dinners on the Wednesday evening preceding the weekend, who are some of the folks that you have lined up this year?
For the wine dinners, so we actually have 26 restaurants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a lot. I mean, Belize, August, Shaya, pretty much, I mean... 26 restaurants.
Sure, you don't have to name them.
Yeah, I mean, they're all going to be at the Grand Tasting, too. And then you can see it on our website as well. But we really have some fabulous wineries that are partnered with them. Super excited for all the... I mean, we had 26 people call us to sign up. And so we are just loving all of the participation.
That's great.
And appreciate it.
That's great. And so those are all on the Wednesday evening.
Mm-hmm. 7 p.m.
So you got to pick one of your favorite 26 spots here around town to go to a wine dinner.
For sure.
And these are all paired dinners, right? Mm-hmm. Multi-course paired dinners. And they team up. Do they team up with a particular winery? Is that typically how it works?
So one that they mostly have already a strong relationship with.
Okay.
So the restaurants will get in contact with us, but they pretty much already have a winery in mind, you know, where they already sell, you know, their wine at
their
restaurant,
sure.
You know, a strong bond already. But we absolutely have restaurants that do need to be paired, and we do that for them too.
That's pretty cool. Well, so with the events then, otherwise the sort of the adult field trips, as you said, the experience
right.
events, when are those happening?
So that's all throughout the weekend. So you'll find them Friday and Saturday.
Oh, okay. So like during the day and things like that.
Same
on
with
Friday
our seminars as well.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about, we got about 2 minutes before we got to take a break. So let's talk about the seminars.
For sure. So one that I'm very, very excited this year about is that we're having a absinthe seminar at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum.
Oh, great.
And we're bringing in Ted Bro to talk about the history of absinthe. I mean...
He's the guy.
He is. And that's just how I kind of feel about the seminars in general, is that...
No, that's all right.
Sorry.
That's okay. No, go ahead. Good. Please continue.
Honestly, our seminars are very top-notch because we're bringing in people that made the history, you know, of what we're talking about. Ted Bro made absinthe legal in America. Scientist. So
yep.
I just feel that we really kicked it up a notch with our seminars. We're bringing in you know, people that really know what they're talking about on the subject, and we're just so excited about
it. So what would be another, so absinthe seminar at the absinthe gallery at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Very cool. And what would be another example or two of seminars that you
have? Sure. So we're also doing a Louisiana caviar, oyster, and champagne seminar.
Oh, that's cool.
Chef Eric Cook's coming in from Tommy's. It's just going to be a very hands-on, you know, learning about where, you know, all of the oysters are coming from. You know, we are very excited to be bringing in some of our sponsors into our seminars as well, different champagnes. So that one's going to be amazing.
Where do the seminar? So, I mean, we talked about the one being at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Mm-hmm. Where is that one going to take
place? That's at the Marriott Convention Center.
Okay.
So unless otherwise specified on the website, like one is going to be with Chef Isaac Toops at Toops Meadery. Toops South.
Toops South.
So otherwise it's going to be at the Marriott Convention Center.
Okay, gotcha.
Kind of classroom style learning.
Perfect. Okay, very good. Well, let's do this, Amy. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more about the wine programming, how that goes down, and then something that, you know, we're going to talk about a little bit of some of the challenges that you've taken on to restore Nalfi to the greatness that it once was. We're going to talk about that too. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffuletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. And we were just chatting during the break. I'm chatting with Amy Brown, who is the executive director of the Wine Food Experience here at Nalfi. And we were talking about all these wine shops in town, all these events going on with Nalfi, all this kind of stuff. So we have a little housekeeping, Amy, to take care of. So we steer people in the right direction.
Right.
So with the wine around,
it's Wino and Bayou Wine Garden participating.
And Swirl?
Yes.
Okay, so those three. So, and that's one of the field trips, so people are going to be able to board a bus, like a party party bus? Is that how this is going to work?
Yeah, a little bus. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Party bus for sure.
So then,
we'll make it that way.
There you go. Of course, it's involving wine. It better, right?
Absolutely.
So then what will happen is people will go and you'll pop by these three wine retailers.
Get a little tour of it, have a tasting of their food.
Okay.
Have a tasting of their wine and, you know, really see the ins and outs of the establishment.
That'll be a lot of fun, and those are all three really good wine shops. So.
Absolutely, and then we're going to have the bus bring them right back to the Saturday Grand Tasting. So.
Okay, so that's on the Saturday before the tasting starts in the afternoon.
Yes, it is.
Gotcha. So you can just make that a whole big complete day.
Yes, and a long day, but filled with amazing wine.
Hey, that's great, and the bus is going to drop you right where you need to be, so you don't even really need to think, and there's your designated driver.
No thinking needed.
I like that. That fits my lifestyle well. Very good, very good. Well, so let's talk a little bit about this, Amy, because one of the things that we know, so it's obviously it's a big event, and it brings not only a lot of guests for the guest experience portion of this, but you've got a lot of moving parts to get the 26 restaurants involved, as you said, and they do food at the Grand Tasting. So let's talk about the Grand Tasting and how that works a little bit on the Friday night and Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we really just want to showcase all of our local talent in New Orleans. And the Grand Tasting, I mean, there's really no better way than to do that. One big open room at the convention center filled with, you know, about 50 of the best chefs in the city, and wine from all over the world. You know, a chance for the wineries and the restaurants to talk with all of the attendees about their product and, you know, just have a great time.
Yeah. So now that's the way it works for people if you've not been to something like this. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm assuming you still do kind of the same setup, right? They're sort of islands of tasting tables.
Walking around, getting a tasting of everything.
And so it's kind of mixed, right? Where you'll have the wine, have wine and food in each of these different islands, so it's not just like wine in one area and food in the other.
They're everybody kind of integrated, you know, sponsorship activations, music, things like that too.
And so that's how many wineries do you expect to be represented this year?
I mean, people register last minute.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
We would love to have, you know, at least 60 wineries at each event. That would be so ideal. So that's what we're hoping to expect.
So now here in Louisiana, and listeners here probably know this if you're in the industry or follow the liquor industry somewhat carefully, you know, you have to use a distributor in the state of Louisiana.
Right.
So we call that the second tier here.
Mm-hmm.
And so by virtue of that, legally, you guys work with the distributors as well, correct?
We are so thankful for our partnerships and relationships with our distributors. I mean, without them, without our wineries, we would not be.
Yeah, right. There wouldn't be the W for the wine and
exactly,
food experience.
Exactly.
That's a key part of the acronym. So,
we need them, and we so appreciate our relationships with them.
Now, how does it work with getting, say, the wine? Say you have a winery that wants to become involved, and maybe they're not distributed here. I know that's happened in years past. So how does that work?
Yeah, I'm actually, you know, helping out a winery with that right now. I think it's a really great opportunity for their product to be shown in New Orleans. And what better way than through our festival? So basically, we would just partner with a distributor and just have their product shipped there. It's a pretty simple procedure. And then, of course, if it's just sampled wines, then that can kind of just be shipped to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they really want to meet a distributor, I think that that's a great way to pair them up and have their product just shipped there.
And see if it works.
Mm-hmm.
That
absolutely
makes a lot of sense. Now, I know one of the things, Amy, that I know you and I have had a conversation with in the recent past here is in recent years, the attendance of the wineries themselves has gone down quite a bit at NAWFI.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's something that you're very dedicated to try and turn around. And I know it's going to take more than just 1 year, but what are some of the things that you're doing to attract the wine? Because let me frame it for listeners a little bit more, if I may, and tell me if I'm wrong. It's kind of become more of the presence has been dominated by the distributors at the table showcasing their portfolio, less wineries, winemakers, and stuff showing up. And that's a key part of this, right, that we're trying to achieve?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's so important for wineries to feel included in NAWFI. And I think
people want to go, right?
You don't want,
no offense to the distributors. You want to interact with the distributor. You want to interact with somebody from the winery.
For sure. I mean, they are the historian on the wine. They're the ones that can really tell, you know, the attendee everything about the wine, everything that went into making the wine. They are the people that have the true knowledge about it. It's important for them to be there. And they're also incredibly passionate about their product. So that makes NAWFI all the better.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the key things to getting wineries to come back to our festival was hands down selling wine at our festival for these wineries to feel that they're actually getting a return.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really a no-brainer to me to pair ourselves with a wine retailer, and that's Brady's Wine Warehouse.
Yep. And they're a newish establishement, right?
They are.
Three, 4 years ago, maybe they opened
exactly.
up.
Exactly. So that's kind of our goal. We want it to be a two-way street. We want Brady's to feel that they have a return in it as well. And so that's getting people in their door by having them be our partner.
Okay. And so when the wineries come, then what will happen is that, we're talking about how the laws work in Louisiana, you can't go to NAWFI and buy a bottle of wine.
Exactly.
So what you're going to end up with is you're going to get a list and you're going to
a little checklist, exactly. Yeah. So we'll make it very organized, very easy for you. Basically, all of the tables at NAWFI will have a number, and then you'll see the bottles on the table of wine, and then they'll each have a letter. And so you'll see on your checklist, you know, table 3, you know, letter A, and you just check that.
Gotcha.
Bring it to Brady's Wine Warehouse table that will be at the event for you. You just swipe your credit card right then and there, and then they'll give you a date and time to pick it up at their store.
Oh, so you can actually pay there and put your order in
exactly.
at the Grand Tasting and then just simply swing by the shop and go pick it
at
up.
At both Grand Tastings, at Vinola, and at Select Seminars.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so one of the other things that I know you know too, Amy, is that when you're talking about return on investment for wineries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the ability for them to sell the wines at the event and then people be able to get it shortly thereafter is a big one. And then what are some of the things that y'all are doing to allow the wineries to connect better with the consumers and even maybe connect better with the industry? Because I think that's been a bit of an issue, right, in years past where people aren't getting the brand exposure that they're looking for.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, getting these wineries into events that they feel comfortable with, more of an intimate event, is a really good solution for that. I know it can be very intimidating to go to these wineries or smaller distributors and say, we need, you know, product for 3,000 people. I think that that's a lot to ask, and it scares them off and they say no.
Sure.
And so that's why we are a full 5 days of events. And I think that some of our smaller events just need more exposure. You know, the Grand Tastings and Royal Street Stroll are our most well known. And then that's the ones that the wineries are shying away from. So it's important that, you know, they know that we have these experiences that they would excel in, that we have seminars that they would love that only has 75 attendees in it, that we have VIP sections to our big events that only have 150 attendees in it, who are true wine connoisseurs who will appreciate their product, where it's not just them pouring it into a glass and have a nice day. They are able to, you know, talk with these attendees about the wine, where it comes from, you know, really have a special experience. So there is a lot that they can do to be involved, where they're feeling that the attendees wanting to go purchase their product after, and, you know, knows more about them.
That's great. And that flipping that, and we got about 30 seconds before we're going to take a break, but that also makes for a nicer visitor experience
for
that's what you want to do.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about, because I think that's something to talk about too, is that the visitor experience, everybody's different in what they're looking for from Now Feed, right? So providing that broad programming to allow people to get the flavor that they want to get is a big part of I know what you're trying to
Absolutely.
Do. Absolutely. Let's do this, Amy. We're going to take another break here on the show. We're going to come back and chat with you a little bit more. Does that work?
Sounds great.
All right, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on, man.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from: Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe, named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner. The Black Duck features over 120 rums, as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with EWGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. If you've been listening to the show, and you should have been, as I always like to say, we're chatting with Amy Brown, who is the executive director of NAWFE, which is, of course, the New Orleans Wine and Food Experience, coming up in, about 3 weeks. And before we took the break here, Amy, we were talking about, kind of improving the experience for the wineries, and something I know that you've been working on diligently moving forward this year and in future years. But kind of, I think the same thing kind of applies to visitors, right, in that different visitors look for different things from different events. And with NAWFE, there's some, you know, grand tastings are big things with lots of people drinking lots of liquor, lots of wine.
Right.
But there are, if that's not your cup of tea, there's other things for you to be able to do that are a little more intimate.
Absolutely. One of my absolute favorite events that we have to offer is Vinola. That is our true wine event. You know, all of our wine connoisseurs love that event. All of our wineries love that event because we have distributors in the audience that come, sommeliers. I mean, it really is the true essence of a wine event in New Orleans. There's no red wine under $75 there, no white wine under $40. And so you're just going to have amazing wine while you're at that event.
Now, where is that at the convention
That's
center?
At the Omni Royal Orleans Hotel.
Oh, okay, great.
And that's on Thursday from 2 to 5.
Okay, great. And is that, so it is a, is it a sort of walk around tasting, but just
Absolutely.
Much smaller in scale?
Much smaller, only about 350 attendees. And so that really is a very educational experience as well. That's very intimate with the distributor, with the winemaker, to really learn about the wine that you're drinking.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So, and then, of course, like we were talking about, the field trips are going to be smaller scale events. We haven't really talked about the Royal Street Stroll. Mm-hmm. So that's on Thursday evening.
Yes.
And that's, let's tell people what that is.
Absolutely. So that's a very quintessential New Orleans event. I would definitely go to this if you're not from here as well, because it's just such a beautiful area of town to explore. Think of it as a high-end block party. We block off 8 blocks of Royal Street. All of the art galleries are involved. We put wineries in the art galleries. So you're kind of just parading through the streets, going in and out of the art galleries, getting a glass of wine, going to the restaurant activations on the street, our sponsorship activations on the street. You know, we'll have a couple wineries out there as well. Crew of Cork will be parading down. We'll have live music. It's beautiful outside during the event too, because it's in the evening. Mm-hmm. So it's just really a fun event.
And that goes on from what time? 6 to
That's 5:30 to 8:30.
5:30 to 8:30. Mm-hmm. Okay. And different bands? You have different bands kind of stationed on the street? Is
yes.
that how that
mm-hmm.
works?
We're going
to
have a DJ. We're going to have a main stage with music on the stage. So it is a very lively event. A lot of fun.
Who are some of the musicians or the bands?
So we actually are still booking those. We, you know, are definitely looking for a couple of people. So if you guys have any suggestions, feel free to email me, info@nowfee.com.
Okay.
So we're still getting that together, but
away.
It's going to be great.
Awesome. So is there live music also at the Grand Tastings?
Because of the space, it was just too loud in the convention center.
Sure.
So
yeah.
That was part of the reason why, you know, we took away music. We've had it there before, but we found that our wineries couldn't speak to the attendees. It was too loud.
Got it.
And that would kind of diminish the whole purpose of the event, I feel.
Got
so
it.
In order for the wineries to feel, you know, that it's worth it for their time, you know, for them to be there, I want them to feel heard. I want to make sure that they feel the connection to the attendee. It can't be too loud.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And that's a good improvement, because mm-hmm. especially if you're in what is essentially a square concrete mm-hmm. room,
exactly.
the sound just bounces off the walls back and forth
for
and nobody
sure.
can really hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about this, Amy. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes left before we're going to close out the interview. We'll make sure we get people the basic 411. Mm-hmm. But a couple things moving forward. Let's mm-hmm. let's talk about the future of NAWFEE. What are some mm-hmm. things that you're going to look to do in the coming years, not mm-hmm. just this year?
So we definitely want to bring back our wine awards. We want that to be a world-class event. We want it to be on par with other, you know, wine competitions in the country. Definitely going to implement that for 2019. And then, you know, we are making changes. We sent out surveys last year to wineries that have participated since the beginning of time in NAWFEE. They told us that Memorial Day weekend just did not work for them. It was too busy. They, you know, wanted to spend Memorial Day weekend with their families. They couldn't fly down. And so we're changing the dates of NAWFEE for them.
Do you guys have dates set for next year?
Definitely March or April.
Okay.
Work in progress. But it was just very important to us to get that participation back. And if that meant changing our date, even though we had been on there, you know, 11 years, Memorial Day, it's worth it to us.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. And I think for people around here, it doesn't necessarily matter all
it
that much.
It doesn't. And you know what? It's getting, you know, we're going into New Orleans summer. And so the earlier, the better, in my opinion.
Especially for the Royal Street Stroll.
Exactly.
And some of that stuff. Yeah, the weather's
no
gonna
more
be
sweating
more
during the stroll.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah,
that makes me pretty happy. Absolutely. So that's cool. So bringing back the wine competition, which mm-hmm. used to be a big part of NAWFEE. But
absolutely.
And you and I were talking before we went on the air here about how important it is to do a wine competition. Mm-hmm. I know you guys talked about maybe doing it this year, but mm-hmm. decided, I think wisely so, to pull back and organize it well. So
right.
It may sound pretty easy to get a bunch of people to taste wine and score it. It's a really hard thing to actually pull together and do well.
Because we have had the wine awards in the past, mm-hmm. but we want to make it the best. And we need a year to plan that. We want a master to be spearheading the whole thing. And so we need to get the right group of people in order to make it happen. And I think that takes longer than just a couple months.
It really does. And mm-hmm. to get the wineries to participate and make sure that it has the curb appeal with all the wine competitions that are out there. You and I were talking about this, mm-hmm. that, you know, people have to pick their spot. So you want them to pick yours.
Absolutely. And I think the better participation that we have with a wine awards competition will be the better participation that we have with NALFI in general.
That makes a lot of sense. It's another way to bring people into the fold, right?
Absolutely.
Well, let's do this. We got about 3 minutes left. So let's run down the website. Let's go over the ticket packages and how people can attend, what they want to attend, and so on.
For sure. So we have three ticket packages to choose from. The first one is the tasting package, gets you tickets to Royal Street and both Grand Tastings. Second one's the connoisseur package, which is a ticket to everything Vinola, Royal Street, Grand Tastings, three seminars, an event at an art gallery that I put together. And then the second one is a VIP package, same thing as the connoisseur, just upgraded to all VIP. So early admittance, VIP lounges, you know, exclusive restaurants and wineries that aren't available to general admission.
So there will be some that are just for the VIP
Absolutely.
People. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Got it.
And then there are a la carte tickets too. So if you can't make the full, you know, weekend, that's fine. Come just to the Royal Street Stroll. Come to one seminar. That's okay too.
That's great. So if you want to do, say, the wine around, like we were talking about going to visit, you can just go do that
Absolutely.
In the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And everything's available on our website, www.nowfee.com. That's NOWFE.com.
Great. Excellent. That sounds fun. It's going to be a good event, friends. So get out there and check it out. And I do appreciate, Amy, that you took some time to talk with me. And I appreciate you answering some of these a little bit more difficult questions.
No, I'm happy to. Thank you so much for having me.
Great. It's good to see that you're bringing some good energy to the event.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely. So, and we look forward to seeing you out at the event.
Me too.
So that will be a lot of fun. Friends, hey, thanks for tuning in here in the first hour of the NOLA Drink Show. What's going to happen? We're going to take a break here at the top of the hour. And we are going to be back. And we are going to, well, we recorded the next segments over at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, which we were just talking about. And we're going to be chatting with Abigail Gulo and Elizabeth Pierce of Drink and Learn. And Abby, of course, runs the bar at the beverage program at Compare La Pan. And Elizabeth is a cocktail historian and tour guide and bon vivant around town. And so we're going to talk with them about their new podcast called Drink and Learn, which is part of the National Food and Beverage Foundation podcast platform, of which this show is a proud part of now. And I'm very happy to be chatting with them. So that's going to be here in the second half of the show. So we're going to take the top of the hour break here, friends, on the NOLA Drink Show. Come back, chat with Abby and Elizabeth, and that's what we're going to do. So stay tuned. Come on back. Begin the fight, drinking wine for the old man. Drinking wine for the old man. Drinking wine for the old man. Pass that bottle to me. We say wine, 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 elderberry. Wine, 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 potent sherry. Wine, 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 blackberry. Wine, 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 red cherry. She listening on the radio. Her feet got happy and she grabbed the dress. The first thing she hollered, that wine is a mess. Drink wine for the old man. Drinking wine for the old man. Drinking wine for the old man. Pass that bottle to me.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint, and it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey, on a bottle of whiskey. Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey, on a bottle of whiskey. Though I feel all right, feel all right, I feel all right, feel all right.
This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning into the show today, friends, as always. And we are sitting here at the wonderful Southern Food and Beverage Museum, as we do from time to time. We're part of the podcast network there as well. Great place to get the show. And I'm pleased to be joined by two of my podcast network mates.
Yay.
Elizabeth Pierce, yes. And Abigail Gulo. How are you both?
Hi, I'm very well.
Good, good. And Elizabeth, how are you?
I am also doing fantastic.
Excellent. Thanks for joining me here on a Tuesday at SoFab. It's fab.
It's so fab.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, the Museum of the American Cocktail is in here, too.
Yes, there is. And we got the absinthe thing, right? Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of stuff going on in this place.
Yeah. Eating and drinking.
Eating and drinking. Seems like an appropriate place to tape the show, doesn't it?
Indeed.
It is. Yeah. So you guys are doing, we'll just start here. This will be, since I mentioned that we're podcast platform, podcast network mates. That's the official title, how we refer to each other.
Sure.
All the
and
time.
The secret handshake that we all know. And so you guys are doing a drink and learn podcast, which was kind of Drink and Learn is your baby, Elizabeth, right?
It is. I'm the owner of and founder of Drink and Learn as of, let's see, I think it was 2012 is when I realized that domain name was totally available and no one had thought to combine those two verbs into a .com. So I snatched that up. Actually, it was my husband who came up with the name, and it's the intersection of my two favorite verbs. Well, that you can do in public.
Things that you like to do in public. Yeah. Okay, yeah, got it.
Right.
You know, it's strange that you say this because with NOLA Drinks, it was the same thing where that domain was available. Nobody had all the social media accounts. I thought, how did that actually happen?
Right.
This is probably why we're on the podcast network together.
We're forward-thinking people.
Yes, so we're late to the game and lucky, either way, however you look at it. But tell us a little bit about what Drink and Learn, what is it to begin with before the podcast?
Sure. So Drink and Learn actually got its start, if you scroll way, way, way back, it actually got its start here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I was the founding curator here. I worked with Liz Williams from 2004 to 2008 to open this museum. I say this for anyone out there who has a dream or an idea. I had no background in museums or history, but a strong liberal arts education prepares you to do anything.
Absolutely.
And I bet Abigail can back me up on this as well.
That makes three of us. Yeah. This is also why we're on the podcast platform
so,
together.
So I learned how to make something out of nothing, and I learned a lot from Liz about just starting a project and just seeing where it takes you. So the museum opened in early 2008, and unfortunately that year ended with the great financial apocalypse. And everyone in the museum got laid off. So that was the year, I joke that I went on unemployment, drank heavily, and dated a musician, which is the Holy Trinity if you just need to shift your professional path.
Not a great way to lift up the economics necessarily,
no,
right?
No, but it definitely raised my blood alcohol content for a steady 6 months. And I eventually learned that both unemployment and musicians run out after 6 months. So I needed a paying gig. And I took all the programming that I'd been doing at the museum, and I began to sell that to convention and meeting planners, the history of New Orleans through food and drink. And after about 2 years of doing that, I realized that what I was getting booked a lot for was telling this narrative of New Orleans through its drinks. There are plenty of people in this town that can talk about gumbo, but what I was doing was pretty special. So I decided to focus just on drinks. I had also begun running a cocktail tour during that time that was public facing. I learned all sorts of stuff about tourism, the leisure traveler, which I always imagine in a leisure suit. I got interested not only in the story of New Orleans and drinks, but the South and the United States. So my domain is not New Orleans focused, and in fact our podcast is not necessarily New Orleans focused either. Mm-hmm. But it's looking at chronicling the story of place through drinks.
I like it. Great. So, Abby, mm-hmm. Let's start with your background a little bit here. And before you intersected with the world of Drink and Learn.
I was in growing up in and around New York City. Spent a little time in the South as well, in Georgia and Virginia. And was kind of a film nerd and theater nerd. So that's what I went to school for, fine liberal arts education with a theater degree. Which, believe it or not, prepares you for a lot. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, while I thought I'd have a career in theater, various economic apocalypses also prevented that. So I learned to think on my feet, think outside of the box. And what I did living in New York City as I struggled to be an actor was actually teach. I was a early childhood development teacher. I ran a children's theater company. And did a lot of theater work and actually prided myself on being an actor who never waited tables. Because, to be honest, I was still a romantic. My grandpa taught me how to make a Manhattan when I was 7 years old. I watched a lot of Thin Man movies and Casablanca. And my idea of cocktails was not what was going on in the bars of New York City. At the time,
In the 90s.
But when I turned 21, I went to a diner because diner placemats always had those beautiful cocktails, right? Pink Ladies and Rob Roy's and Mai Tais. And I tried to order a Rob Roy from a diner, the Moonstruck Diner on 9th Avenue and 23rd Street, to be exact. And they kind of went away and came back and said, yeah, we don't have the ingredients to make that. And I was like, wait, why don't you?
It's
you
had some placement menu. Yeah.
So I started seeking out the people who were making them, which was not a lot of people, a handful of people. But that's how I discovered Del DeGroff at the Rainbow Room and Audrey Saunders at Bellamy's Bar and eventually Julie Reiner at Flatiron and Audrey at Pegu. So I was still very much just a connoisseur of cocktails. It was a very small group, and I just happened to be living in New York City when the next golden age of cocktails kind of came upon us in the turn of the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Again, working in theater and with children is not always very lucrative, especially in 2008, the great economic crash. So I said, hey, maybe it's time I start bartending. So I took jobs where I can get them until a man named Cliff Travers, who was running a bar in Williamsburg, took a chance on me, and he had a beautiful bar program, and I started cocktail bartending.
And so you just jumped in and you managed to get yourself behind a bar slinging rum and cokes or something, and then
I worked at a place called the Heidelberg, which was a old school beer bar on the Upper East Side, where I wore a dirndl to work every day, and was told that
do
I
you
was
still have that like oh, yes, in a closet.
Of course
I hope so.
I do. It comes in handy here in New Orleans, and then. I was told I was I smiled too much. My German counterpart, I said, how am I doing as a bartender? She's like, you smile too much. They don't like it when you smile.
Oh, so you needed to be the world-weary barkeep who...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, got it.
And I liked the idea of like acting like different things. But that was kind of an early indicator of why I wasn't going to be as successful in New York as a bartender. I smiled too much. I didn't have a mustache. I started to get some tattoos just to kind of stand out in the crowd with the other guys. But I was working at a bar in Brooklyn Fort Defiance that had kind of a New Orleans vibe to it. The owner, St. John Frizzell, went to Tulane and lived here till 99 and had a great love affair with the city. And I started entering contests and got sent details of the cocktail kind of every year and started going every year. And I really was falling in love with New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have you hold that thought, Abby. We'll come back to that in just a second. We're going to take a little break here on the show, friends. We are chatting with Abigail Gulo and Elizabeth Pierce from Drink and Learn. And we're going to continue with Abby's story. We're going to figure out how these two got together, how they ended up doing a podcast, and where we go from here. We're going to take a little break, friends. Come on back.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iber.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellar.
Every afternoon when I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up and thanks the Lord. Driving me home.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today, or whatever day it is that you're listening. Actually, I should say, when you're on podcast land, I don't know really what goes on, but however you're getting the show, I dig it. Abby, we're going to come back to you because you were just talking about how you got connected to the world of New Orleans from afar.
I did. I'd always come here for a bit when I was a kid, because I went to college in the South, and my first time here was actually my dad was a journalist, and he was covering the Republican National Convention. And my parents were like, I was only 15 at the time, but they were kind of just letting me loose to do my own thing. And I remember I met this nice girl on the plane, and she took me out to the Hard Rock Cafe downtown. And I just remember thinking, man, if this town is this much fun when it's full of Republicans, I gotta come back.
Right. If it could absorb that. Yeah, well, that's great.
The kind of hospitality I could just kind of offer. I have this like need to please disease. And my boss in New York was like, you got to get to New Orleans. You're just going to do so much better there. And he was right. As soon as I got here, I felt really much more welcomed, and I was able, given the tools to succeed, and just felt more comfortable in a service industry friendly town.
Yeah.
And someone told me once, to live in New York City, you have to be successful. To live in Los Angeles, you have to be good looking. But to live in New Orleans, you just have to be yourself.
Exactly.
And I feel like I'm more myself here than I've been anywhere else.
That's fantastic. That's very true what you just said. Elizabeth, where are you from originally? Are you from here?
Oh, I grew up in Covington.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, just across the lake. My mother would be very upset if I said, I'm from here. She would remind me that you are not from New Orleans. And actually, frankly, most New Orleanians would agree with her. So, yeah, I grew up about an hour. For those of you folks that don't know the geography of southern Louisiana, I grew up about an hour outside of New Orleans.
Across the lake.
Across the lake,
as
you
we
say. You can't say you're from New Orleans unless you say what high school you went to.
Yeah.
Did you go to Covington?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Go Lions.
There we go. We established that. So that there's your track record right there. Did you ever work in a bar, Elizabeth, or anything? How did you come into the
no.
cocktail world?
No. So it was I came at it from the complete other side of the bar. That would be the drinking side. Well, I guess both sides are technically drinking. But really from the storytelling. The very first exhibit I did for the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, when it was still really just an idea, was on the drinks of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So I've always kind of viewed it through the lens of what does it illuminate about a place or people I mean, obviously, also from the lens of the bottom of the glass, my glass is empty. You need to fill it.
Right, right.
But, yeah, so I've never attended bar, except for one Halloween night in Covington. Yeah, and I don't even know if it went well or not, because it was very much a rum and coke kind of night.
There is no such thing as a real bar in Covington. So anyway, but
Okay.
We can argue the finer points of a couple things. We'll do that.
I actually think the bar at the Southern Hotel, if you're looking for fancy cocktail stuff, they would argue that they're doing that.
They probably would, although the guy that was running the bar up until very recently is no longer there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's a conversation for another time.
Yes.
I live in Old Mandeville, Elizabeth. So
oh,
I do.
Do you? Okay, all right. Well,
so
then
I do come from a certain
level. You definitely know more about what's going
something.
On over there than
something.
Than I do.
Yeah. Okay, so now as we move forward, then, and Abby, we should say this too. So now you're running the beverage program at Compare La Pan.
Yes, Compare La Pan in the Warehouse District, a mm-hmm. Caribbean restaurant run by Chef Nina Compton. It's the most. It's the fulfillment of like that combination I've always wanted to do of good food and good drinks. When I first got into the industry, I noticed that there were great cocktail bars and there were great restaurants, but it was hard to get a good cocktail at a great restaurant. And so I knew that there was a hole in the industry, and that's what I've been working on since I started, is really to like make that combination, and it's really come to fruition with this program.
That's great. And you were at Sobu before, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. where I met you. And then,
yeah.
then you went to Compare La Pan from there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. How long have you been?
I wanted to see what life was like outside of the quarter.
Yeah, wow.
the other side of Canal.
Big time. That's real stretch. That's amazing. So so how long have you been at Compare?
3 years now.
It has been 3 years. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, wonderful. So now how did the two of you then connect?
We met at a USBG event. That's mm-hmm. the US Bartenders Guild. That was held at Sobu. And Abigail did a presentation.
On the Manhattan?
On maybe.
Okay, so it wasn't advanced garnish. I want to make sure that it wasn't.
No. No, but I don't know, because you did the Manhattan at SoFab, I think. Like, that was a different talk.
Oh.
You did it on flavors or something.
Oh. Okay.
I think. Anyway, the reason that I went up and talked to her, besides the fact that she was totally charming and genial and smart, was she was wearing a Mets cap because it was the first or the last day I guess the World Series had ended the day before, so
yeah.
It was over.
Yeah.
And I asked, I remarked on it. I am not a baseball fan, but I'm married to one. So we were visiting, and then I found out that she's this huge Mets fan, and I actually texted Lee, my husband, and said, you should meet Abigail. Y'all will have a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. Baseball things.
Oh, we do. Do we ever.
Yeah. But we just hit it off. You know when you're in like fourth or fifth grade and you meet somebody and you're like, we're going to be friends. And the other person's like, yeah. And it's just decided. That's not a thing adults really do anymore. Although we should, because every now and then you meet someone as an adult and just right off the bat, you like each other and
absolutely.
You're like, we're going to be friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have been.
I think we think alike a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we've had a couple of drinks in us, the conversation just really starts to pile up and flow. And it's super, super fun. And we get excited about our life experience, which sometimes is remarkably different, but we still get excited to share it.
Yeah.
With each other.
I really respect the fact that you were wearing a Mets hat right after the World Series ended, because I'm going to guess that the Mets weren't anywhere near the World Series that year.
Hey, you got to have high.
No, you got to represent. I mean, I'm also a very big baseball fan, Elizabeth,
okay.
So this is part of the conversation.
Who is your team?
I grew up in the Bay Area, so I'm an Oakland A's fan, which
okay.
is, you know, that's a tough road to hoe, being an A's fan, especially lately. But yeah.
You have the greatest AAA team the world has ever seen.
Which is like you and I were talking about, the permeable barrier that is our Major League team and our AAA team. Hard to tell the difference, really. Although my boy threw a no-hitter on Saturday. He saw that, so that was good.
Sean, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's
Thank
awesome.
You very much. So you guys started doing, the podcast is new, right?
Yes.
Relatively.
We have two episodes that have been edited and published, and another that is calling my name.
Got it. And here on the network, on the...
Yes.
Yes, okay. Excellent.
Yeah, so super new.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit. We got a couple minutes before we got to take a break. What's the format?
Oh, so we decided to do a season. And a finite season, because what if we hate it? And then that way right. it could end without anybody getting disappointed. And so right now, with an exception of how we started, our first episode was So Now You're 21. but the others will be more focused on a particular cocktail, looking at its history, looking at its construction, and any other info that we want to share with our listeners about that. So there's a little bit of culture, a little bit of history, a little bit of advice.
And, yeah, we offer some techniques.
If you wanted
to make the drink, how we make it, how we like it, our personal history with it as well as the actual history of it. And then I always like to give people, you know, having been service industry is in peril, great peril right now. So I like to end it with like little notes on how you can make a life for your service industry worker a little easier.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Great. How long is each episode typically?
It's about half an hour.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Let's take another break here since we're working in the world of radio as well as podcasts. And we're chatting with Abigail Gulo and Elizabeth Pierce of Drink and Learn. We're going to get a little bit more on their podcast, how you can connect with the podcast. And I think we'll wax philosophic about the drink scene in New Orleans and beyond, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
If you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now all through the week it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. We are chatting with Elizabeth Pierce and Abigail Gulo of Drink and Learn. It's a pleasure to have you both on.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
Yes, thanks.
And Elizabeth, this is the first time you've been on the show with me, so thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. We'll have to do it again soon. It'll be great. And Abby, I was thinking earlier when we were getting ready to do this, we were arranging this last couple weeks, that this was going to be the first time that you were on. But you and I, you came on my show when we taped out at Runaway Boucherie in Grand Coteau, Louisiana, about a year and a half ago.
Magical.
That was a great event, wasn't it?
It's always so much fun. Such a great group of people. It's such a wonderful learning experience. The first one I went to, I was fully prepared to say, okay, I might become a vegetarian after this. And and then surprisingly did not have that effect on me. In fact, it was the opposite. I was now like, I want to know where my meat comes from, mm-hmm. where everything I eat comes from. I want it to be treated as reverently and with as much joy as these people do. I mean, they're a wonderful, wonderful group of people.
Being a part of that whole process was really neat because, as you're saying, there was a solemn dignity to the whole thing. And, mm-hmm. I'm sure you did the same. I found it important to see the slaughtering and butchering process and all of that to connect with the food like we're talking about. And it was, it's a difficult thing to watch to a degree, but it teaches you, I think, respect. And as I said, a solemn dignity was what struck me. And I know the food that I ate that night was really good.
It was excellent. And boy, did they know how to party.
Boy, do they know how to party.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Yes, that
great
was really fun.
Great music, great dancing. Oh, God, I love seeing men dance. Again, this is the old romantic in me, right? I'm like, oh, God, look, men dancing. Oh, be still my heart.
And how cool was that to see the Lost Bayou Ramblers on their home turf?
Oh, yeah.
When they played that night.
Oh, that was fantastic.
That was really great.
Fantastic.
I do hope they do that event again. That would be
I hope
really
so, too.
Fun. Well, Elizabeth, if they do it again, you'll have to go. Have you ever been to one of those before?
I have not. I have been to a boucherie because I'm married to a Cajun, but I have not been to that runaway boucherie, which sounds like a lot of fun. I will also say the boucherie I went to, no one was dancing because everyone was just stuffing their faces. This was kind of early on when Lee and I were dating, and I was still so enamored with cracklin because you could not get them in New Orleans.
Yeah, sure.
And I ate so many cracklin. I ate till I was sick, like a child during Halloween. And I excused myself, and I went and I sat on the curb of this sidewalk, like outside the house, and just kind of moaned. And Lee came out. He's like, "What's going on?" I was like, "I ate too many cracklin. I couldn't stop." And then he said, "Well, come. Like, the pig is ready. I can't eat any pig.
No more pig.
Oh, that's travesty. See, that's, you can't overdo it. It's the same with alcohol. It's like, yes. Oh, it's a shame to do so much that you can't drink more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drink better and drink less.
Yeah, exactly. Because you always want to in the moment. You're thinking, you and I were talking about this, Abby, when we first got here, that in a roundabout way, you always think, oh, I can do one more.
Yeah.
And at the time, you can do more.
But you shouldn't.
But you
shouldn't.
Maybe shouldn't.
Uh-huh. It's always the next. I always tell like the younger members of my family, oh, I can keep up with you and I can probably put you down, but you'll be up in the morning doing okay and I will not be.
No. Yeah. Recovery time is a little bit harder for us in our 40s now.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So with the podcast, you both with Drink and Learn, so about a half an hour. Are you guys roughly, what's the interval? Weekly, every couple weeks?
Every 2 weeks. Yep.
Okay, great. Excellent.
Because if there's no external deadline, then the next one will not get posted.
That is the hard part, isn't
it? If you promise
people. We kind of have busy lives.
If you promise people, then like it will get done.
Yeah.
And we do have at least, I have another in the can that is... can still, so I've bought us time. I think that's what the other thing that we got some, a little bit of advice, and one of it was have more recorded than you have, you know, put out.
Yes.
So that you're not frantically recording the night before you're supposed to post.
Yes.
Something.
You know, as a matter of fact, this will air on the show next week on the radio and next Friday's podcast. So to your point.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well done.
thank you. I have learned that as well too. It works with my lifestyle of procrastination.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Lifestyle of procrastination.
I feel like we were all those people.
Put that in my bio.
That we wrote our paper the night before it was due.
Yeah.
I have an undergraduate degree in liberal arts as well. So
yeah, here we are.
Oh yeah. So give me an example. Like say the latest episode that's out on the podcast. What was the cocktail that you featured?
So the most recent episode was about now you're 21. And rather than talk about this was a bit of an outlier episode, but we felt like we needed to start with that advice, you know, like we said we would start from the very beginning. And instead we talked about several drinks that would be, several things to drink that you could drink if you were going out drinking for the first time legally. The presumption being that you've been drinking already poorly, illegally.
Yeah, because it's when you're forced to do it illegally, you're kind of forced to take what
selection
you can get.
Selection isn't exactly right, sure.
You know, whatever your friend's brother could get for you. Or,
and now
you
know.
That's
have
why I drank
a
lot of wine coolers in high school. Sorry, Abby, you were saying.
No, now you have a choice. So you should be make a more well-informed decision and drink something that is not going to make you too sick. Mm-hmm. Drink something that is going to be, you know, better for you, better maybe for the people around you. You know, you take care of yourself and take care of the people around you. And you should... imbibe with class.
Yeah.
You should have like a little bit more sophistication.
More than once we said don't throw up. Like that was
That's
a big
advice.
Takeaway.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Big takeaway.
Try don't really hurl. Hard to not throw up.
Hydrate.
Yeah.
Mix water in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said you gave a few examples of some drinks that people might want to try as they dip their toe into the bar world.
Pimm's Cup.
Great.
Always a favorite.
Yep.
Easy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like it.
A classic handshake and daiquiri.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The way Hemingway would have drank it.
Very good.
Again, you have a beautiful tradition to uphold with some of these drinks.
Yeah. French 75 also.
75. Okay.
Yeah, we
very
talked
classy.
About those.
And so the idea was, I'm assuming too, I think you kind of said this, that the idea is if you're going out, to going to a bar, going to a place, what to order, what to look for.
And I think that in general, most people who are turning 21, they want to go out because they want to be carded.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right. It's like, here's my card. I am my license. I am, in fact, legal tonight. Sometimes a bar, you know, will give you a free drink or a free shot, usually a free shot. The presumption is that you're going out. But I guess you could host too.
Sure.
Have people come over and bring you drinks.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And Pimm's Cup's a good one to do, right? Not
right.
too hard to make. And
also, right. If you're relying on your friends who are the same age as you are to make drinks, you want something that they can't screw up.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty tough. Actually,
so
you can really screw up just
Pimm's Cup. Pimm's Cup, I think, is a forgiving drink.
That's true.
Yeah,
I have had some bad ones. So I mean, it's
really?
Yeah.
What made it bad?
Well, you know, when it was a two-ingredient Pimm's Cup that was disproportionate.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's. I mean, the Sazerac is a very simple drink with very few ingredients, and yet the construction of it is so important.
Yes.
That it's easy to mess up that drink.
That is a very easy drink to mess up, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the parameters of what is a Sazerac and what is not is very narrow,
yes.
in my
mm-hmm.
view.
Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, how do you, since we're on the topic, how do you come down? I mean, what would be a difference, amount of bitters and types of bitters?
Amount of bitters.
My choice.
Well, there's only obviously. One choice, really, for a Sazerac.
Now, there will be some debate there, but which is for you? Are you Sazerac rye or...?
I actually do a split base.
Do
rye and cognac.
Yeah, okay.
But I just do Peychaud bitters.
Yeah.
And or Creole bitters. And sugar.
Yep.
You know, the amount of sugar that you use.
Yep.
And how you use it.
You know, I once... did a presentation for the U.S. Bartenders Guild on the Sazerac history in New Orleans. And I asked a room of 20 bartenders. I said, we're just going to go down the line and you're going to tell me what bitters you use and how many dashes. And it ranged from 2 dashes of bitters to like 14.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Gustings uses a ton of bitters.
Of course he does.
13 is his number.
And that was just astonishing, you know, and with everyone pretty much pouring, using 2 ounces of whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
So that whenever people on my tour or that I encounter ask me, you know, where should I go get a Sazerac? I say, you need to know the Sazerac that you want, and then you tell your bartender, I like it heavy bitters or lighter bitters.
I used to do that when I first started ordering Manhattans in my early 20s. I was like, I like Manhattans heavy bitters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because a good bartender will have their go-to recipe,
mm-hmm.
but a great bartender will be able to accommodate
what's your taste
the guest.
Yeah. Let's do this, y'all. Let's take another break here, and we'll come back, and we're going to do one more segment with Elizabeth and Abigail. Come on back.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special 2-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu,
life is meant to be lived, not endured.
All All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. I want to make sure that we give a shout out to our friends here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Always nice to tape here. It's a great place. Open every day except for Tuesday. Come check it out. It's also the home for the Museum of the American Cocktail. There's an absinthe display, which I'm forgetting. What's the absinthe?
The Galleria de Absinthe.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. It's a really neat tour, and it's a great collection of very interesting things. So please do come check them out here on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. Very pleased to be joined by Abigail Gulo and Elizabeth Pierce. Thanks for taking some time out today.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. It's great. It's fun to have you all on, and it's fun to be podcast network mates, as we're talking about. Right before we took the break, we were talking about the Sazerac. Was there any thoughts that we wanted to come back on that? I mean, we were talking about the sort of the particularity, Elizabeth, you were saying, going down the line asking people about bitters. Do we say that during the break, or do we say
No, we that actually got recorded.
All right. Okay, yeah. Good.
But I think it actually is a it's a nice stand-in, or people, I think people ask about ask for bartender advice or drinks advice, and you can see just from that one anecdote the wide variety of choices that bartenders make to kind of put their own little twist or stamp on a drink, and that you can, you know, they say you never dip your foot in the same river twice, right? Because you're different and the river is different. But I think that even if you just ordered one drink all of your life, which I think is boring, but like there are people that do that, you could order an old fashioned across New Orleans, and you would never have the same old fashioned.
Yeah, it's like the roux of a gumbo.
Yeah,
it's going to be different every time you make it. Every bartender is going to make it differently. They're going to use different product. They're going to use, you know, a different technique, different ice. There's a lot of factors involved in making a drink, and that's why you continue to go out and seek stuff out, because you never know what you know. You could order the same drink at every bar and still have a different experience.
Yeah, and we know ambiance, your mood, the server's mood, the mood of the room that you're in, everything also plays into your sensory perception. And so you can have a same spec old fashioned in two different places and the experience still won't be the same.
I mean, I have, you know, my bartenders follow the same specs, and sometimes people will say, I like your drink better. And I said, well, I use a secret ingredient. And they say, what's that? And I'm like, love.
Love.
I put a little love in every cocktail. You can taste it.
It's like the novel, like Water for Chocolate, right?
Yes.
That everyone can taste her joy or her sadness. But it does totally matter if I'm being served by somebody who clearly doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
I taste their bitterness, their sullenness. Or if, you know, did I just, I've eaten a fantastic meal while in the process of breaking up with someone or getting broken up with. And that certainly colored my experience. Yeah. And the same goes for drinks, too.
Yeah, I find my hangovers will be worse if I've been emotionally drinking.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter.
As
like
opposed
how much
to celebratorily.
Celebratory drinking, which, I don't know, last night must have been a combination of two.
You're perking up from when I first looked at you when we walked in here today.
I don't know, maybe it's all this talk about drinks. Maybe I'm ready for Hair of the Dog.
You're ready for Hair of the Dog. It wasn't because we kind of talked about it in a very circumspect sort of way, but you went there, so there you go.
Yeah.
You had a big night last night.
I'm feeling a little green about the gills today.
You don't look green. I mean, except for your shirt.
Yeah,
her shirt is green.
She's got a healthy shade of pink, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Well, we've had a lot of pearls of wisdom here on this show because, as you said, Elizabeth, that a good bartender will make a decent drink, and you said it better, but a great bartender will make it the way you like it. And then we've had emotionally drinking or celebratory drinking. I like those two terms. This has been really solid stuff here. What with the next episode of Drink and Learn, coming up, what do we got going on?
The old fashioned.
Ooh, yay. Okay.
Yes.
Kind of like the first cocktail. So, and it's very hot right now. It's so hot right now. People love their old fashions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's great.
Mm-hmm.
In a town that never quit drinking them.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
This will be a topic we'll have to have you back on, because one of the things that I like to ask about, we don't have a ton of time, is that, you know, like we were talking about the so-called craft cocktail renaissance around 2000 or thereabouts. And, you know, New Orleans has always kind of had a thing going on. It never really went away.
No, no, it's the missing link as far as, like, never kind of losing the thread of what a good cocktail is and what the experience, how the experience of drinking should be right. Part of the community.
Right. It makes a lot of sense. I think it's very true. We like to tell people that here, too.
Yeah.
They need to be reminded of that from
time
to
time. Why do you think I was drawn to the city?
Absolutely. Right. If I go to some tiki place in Los Angeles and they take 20 minutes to give me a porpoise carved out of a pineapple and then tell me how great that is, well, I'll just take a Sazerac. It works fine for me.
Oh, I love at the end of a night when I'm in a bar someplace else, I'll tell them I'm from New Orleans and then ask them to make me a Ramos. I was just recently in Rome and I actually got to go behind the bar and teach them how to make a Ramos, and it was so much fun. They were so sweet.
Did they hate you?
No, they loved it. One of them blogged about it. He was so sweet.
Oh,
they were so lovely. I found this immediately, like on my first night there, found this bar that was like that third place. You know, it was breakfast and great barista during the day and awesome cocktails and delicious food at night. And I was just there every night. I mean, I booked an Airbnb on purpose near this famous speakeasy and I never went because I just went to this bar every night.
That's cool.
Because they were, a lot had to do with the staff. They were lovely and treated me so well. And I was absolutely honored to be able to step behind their bar and make a Ramos for them. And in fact, they wanted me to like make up another drink, and I did kind of on the fly, and it turned out so well. It's now on my menu at Compare Le Pan.
Oh, what exciting. Is it?
The Cherokee Rose.
All right. Well, yeah. I'll have to come try
it. Oh, yeah. Come try it. It's my Roman inspiration.
Well, okay. Here's what we're going to do. We'll get you on again soon because we have to talk about some of these travel stories and the Cherokee Rose and all this stuff because we only got about a minute and a half left before we got to close this out. Tell people where they can find the Drink and Learn social media-wise as well as find the podcast.
So drinkandlearn.com, Drink and Learn on all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and you can find the podcast anywhere that you look for your podcast,
great.
Whether it's iTunes or Spotify, and it's the Drink and Learn podcast.
Excellent. Perfect. Abigail, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely a pleasure. Elizabeth, thank you also for being
thank
here.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, you guys. That was Abigail Gulo and Elizabeth Pierce from Drink and Learn. Drink and Learn podcast. Be sure to check them out. You can also catch the podcast along with the podcast version of this show on the National Food and Beverage Foundation Podcast Network. Just Google it. You'll find it easy enough. And hey, we'll be back with a new show next week. Everybody, really appreciate everyone tuning in today. I don't know what the show is going to be next week. We figure that out as we go. So everybody, remember, be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until then, cheers, y'all.